On Tech News Today, Facebook was caught treating users like lab rats. Is that wrong? The Associated Press will publish computer-generated stories. Is that bad? And Google is taking control of its many new versions of Androids. Is that a mistake? All the answers coming up right now on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Monday, June 30th, 2014. This episode is brought to you by ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter makes hiring faster, easier, and cheaper. Post your job to 50-plus job boards with one click. Try ZipRecruiter for a free 4-day trial now at ZipRecruiter.com/TNT. That's ZipRecruiter.com/TNT. And by Personal Capital. With Personal Capital, you'll finally have all your financial life in one place and get a clear view of everything you own. Best of all, it's free. To sign up for Personal Capital, go to personalcapital.com/TNT. Tech News Today is the show where we talk about the tech news with the journalists who report it. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Mike Elgin. Jason Howell is off today. Anthony Nielsen is filling in for Jason. Our guest co-anchor today is Kevin Toefel, a writer who covers mobile technology, wearable devices, and the wireless industry for GigaOm. Welcome, Kevin.
Good to be here, Mike. Thanks.
Now, you and I were geeking out at Google I.O. over the Android Wear watches. You've been wearing yours full-time. You've got the Samsung. I've been wearing mine full-time. I've got the LG. What do you think?
I think that Google has delivered Google Now to the wrist like I've always wanted, but I also think there's still a lot of work to be done here. There's no third-party apps that really work with this yet, although I can control music such as Amazon Music. I can't read Google Plus replies, though, and comments. I can't even reply to those. Email works pretty good. There's just a lot of bits that still have to be worked out, I think.
Yeah, I agree with that. And it's clear that there's enormous promise with this. And I think, to me, as I've said on the show last week, Google Now is a real winner on the watch. It's just a great place for notifications to pop up and to sort of give you the kind of contextual, preemptive information that Google Now has always delivered. The problem with Google Now has been that it's been buried in one place or another. You had to go actively seek it out to use it. Now it just appears on, if you have the vibration set, it just buzzes your wrist and, oh, look, and you get the information. It's really a great way to do that. Plus, they've done a great job, I think, conceptually, of shrinking down the nuggets of information to their bare minimum. So you can see the potential, but I think I agree with you. I think it's going to be app developers who are going to unlock its real potential, and we'll see it evolve over time. The watches will get rounder and smaller, and maybe the battery life will get better. Now, one bit of news that happened this morning around Android Wear is that T-Mobile now accepts pre-orders for the LG G smartwatch, the one I'm wearing here, and these will be available July 16th. And so if you are a T-Mobile customer and want to buy it through T-Mobile, you can now order it. And Kevin, you sent out a picture over Twitter, I believe yesterday over the weekend at some point, showing how horrible the screen for your Android Wear device looks in direct sunlight.
Yeah, that was, it was probably not ideal circumstances. I was in a pool, so I had sunlight reflecting my eyes. The camera may have made it look a little darker than it really is, but I figured out if you have a dark watch face, and you can choose multiple watch faces here, if you have a dark watch face, it's really tricky to see in sunlight, at least with this particular watch, the Samsung Gear Live. This has the Super AMOLED display. You can crank the brightness up to 5 on a scale of 1 to 5. It's going to depend, I think, on the watch face you choose, so you're going to want to pay attention to that if you're going to be outside a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. And I went running. I know you're a big runner. I went trail running yesterday and found myself wanting to look at the watch, and I ended up looking for some shade so that I could really see it, because in the direct sunlight, I just really couldn't see it very well. So that is going to be a problem. Hopefully somebody will be able to solve that. The trick, of course, is to make sure that the watch face can be read in direct sunlight, also have it be a bright, colorful screen, and also have reasonable battery life. Those three don't go together.
It is typically a trade-off with mobile devices. And the one unknown here is last week at Google I.O., you and I both saw the Moto 360 watch, which neither of us have yet, but will get when it's available. That display looked very bright, and it almost appears as if Moto has laminated the display to the touchscreen, raising up the visibility of what's on screen. It looks like it's painted on. So my hope is that in sunlight, that looks a little better.
Yeah, I hope so, too. And, of course, that's the one that everybody at the show was really pining after. That it just looks so much better with a round face, and I really don't know why anybody would make a square watch face when the round one is available, and it looks so good. So we'll see what happens when that they come out, and then of course after that there's probably going to be a big rush over the next 6 months of round Android Wear devices, so that's going to be pretty cool. Well, let's jump into the news. Facebook revealed last week that it had manipulated the news feeds of a randomly selected 689,000 users for a psychological study. The experiment had Facebook changing the number of positive or negative posts people saw for 1 week in January of 2012 just to see if mood is contagious on social media. In other words, they changed and tweaked the general tenor of the posts that people were seeing on their incoming feeds to see if what they posted themselves were more positive or more negative. And we're going to talk about all the details, the results of that study, and what the implications are for Facebook doing this in just a second. With us to discuss it is Leonid Bershidsky, who writes for Bloomberg.com. Welcome, Leonid.
Hi, thanks for having me.
We're so glad you're here. Now, you wrote in a column on Bloomberg that Facebook is using us all as lab rats. Is that bad?
Well, it's normal for Facebook. That's what it does every day. It manipulates the news feed that we get unless we tweak the settings so that they're constantly experimenting on us and recording our reactions to the experiments.
And, of course, this used to be called EdgeRank. They don't have a name for it anymore, apparently. And a Facebook engineer named Lars Backstrom wrote in a blog post in August of 2013 that there are typically, the average user has about 1,500 items that could show up on the news feed, but Facebook displays only about 300 of them. So that's a significant minority of the posts that your friends and family post that you actually see in your news feed. Again, as you say, unless people actively tweak their news feeds, which I suspect most people don't do. But do you think that it's different that they're doing a study, a psychological study on people rather than just trying to improve the website itself? I mean, most of their, theoretically, Facebook would tell you that most of their tweaking and messing around with their algorithm is for improving the service, to reduce the noise, as they call it, that people see in their news feeds. But this is different, isn't it? This has nothing to do with improving it for users.
Well, it could theoretically be used for improving the service for advertisers, because basically, if you can mess with the emotional content of posts, you can stimulate activity by adding in more emotion, taking out the posts that are perceived as less emotional. One of the findings in that study was that people actually post less if they see fewer emotional posts, whether they're negative or positive. So, you know, service improvement is, you know, it's sort of a very big grab bag. You could, you know, put anything in it. And improving service for whom? Improving service for Facebook itself, for advertisers, for users. It's not an easy matter.
Leonid, this is actually an experiment that I guess we've all agreed to, because it's in the terms of service that we've agreed to with Facebook, that they can kind of do this kind of stuff. So legally, it sounds like they're on okay ground, but morally and ethically, I mean, is this really right for them to do?
Well, tweaking the news feed is not right for them to do. It's basically a matter of forcing users to opt out of the tweak of the you know, their algorithm for changing the news feed. Twitter, for its part, basically asks you to opt in. by, you know, having that discover button where you can go and then, you know, see the newsfeed as Twitter would present it to you and not the natural way, right? On Facebook, it's the other way around. You have to opt out of their editing, pretty much. And that's not nice, and it's less honest than what Twitter does. But if you're on Facebook and you have to deal with that every day, you basically accept that they're going to do this to you. So talking about ethics in this case, I can understand academics talking about academic ethics, whether the experiment subjects have been properly notified in the terms of service, which are 9,000 words, and you know you can hardly find the line there that allows them to use user data for research. As an academic discussion, it may have some merit, but like if we're talking about it as users, I don't think we can make an ethical argument against what Facebook does, because we know what it does if we use the service. We know that they do it all the time.
Now, it's kind of interesting how this news came to light. Basically, the research was done with Facebook and also researchers at Cornell and the University of California at San Francisco. They published the study in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, a very prestigious scientific publication. And then there was a smattering of news reports saying, hey, it looks like social media is contagious. If this study reveals that if people see positive posts, they themselves post positive posts and so on. And then at some point over the weekend, somebody said, wait a minute, they did this study and on people, sort of experimenting with people. And then it became controversial and everybody was freaking out about it. Now, the question over whether this is legitimate science is also being discussed, some saying that it is not. The question at its core is whether agreeing to the terms of service of a site like Facebook is the same as what they call, quote, informed consent for an experiment. And that is the controversial point. I would argue that it isn't. In fact, I would argue that there's something wrong with being able to just do anything the terms of service allow you to do, even though legally it's solid. I would guess that probably 99.9% of all Facebook users couldn't recall a single fact from the terms of service. They probably, you know, the vast majority probably don't read it, even though it's legally binding, even though it affects people. And in this case, it affects people's moods. Maybe this experiment made some people depressed or something. I mean, you know, they're messing around people's heads. And really, they consented to it? This doesn't seem like informed consent to me.
Well, you know, judging by the results of the experiment, it probably didn't make anyone depressed, because the change in behavior that came from reading the modified newsfeed was minimal. It was very, very, very small, tiny. So it probably didn't really affect anybody's mood in any life-changing way. As for the, reading the terms of service, if you don't read the terms of service on the services that you use, you're basically setting yourself up for all sorts of nasty stuff. And there's a lot of small print in all these terms of service documents. And, you got to take the time, even if it's long, even if it's legalese, you have to take the time to read it if you're signing up for something that you're going to use every day for hours, the way people use Facebook. I've read the terms of service, and I know that they're very broad and that they allow Facebook to do a lot of stuff with our information that we normally wouldn't like people to do. But it's a trade-off. You want to use a service where all your friends are, where that you use for work, where you exchange a lot of information, that you use for messaging. It's a trade-off. You give them something for that. It's a free service,
Absolutely. Well, Leonid Bershidsky, I want to thank you for coming on Tech News today and explaining this and telling us about your article, which is at Bloomberg.com. Thanks again for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
You can also find Leonid on Twitter at Bershidsky. Well, in just a sec, we're going to tell you about something happening in the world of journalism. It's not pretty for us journalists, potentially. But first, I want to tell you about ZipRecruiter. If you're a hiring manager, if you have a small company and you want to hire people, that's the most important decision you're going to make for your business, because having the right people is the very fact that will make your business successful, and hiring the wrong people could end in disaster. You want to hire the right people. So how do you do that? The problem is that the job candidates are spread out all over the internet on multiple job boards, all over social media. How do you get them all? Well, the way you do it is with ZipRecruiter, one of our sponsors today. The way ZipRecruiter works is that you can post your job post instantly to 50 plus job sites all at once with a single click. They also post your jobs to social networks like LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, and Google Plus all at once. So you get this incredibly wide net cast out there to find the very best potential candidate, no matter where they are. And then you would otherwise be inundated with far too many candidates, most of whom are probably not qualified, and ZipRecruiter helps you with that as well. They will automatically highlight the best candidates so that you don't have to sort through them laboriously. You can just look through the best candidates, the ones who are actually qualified, and then you can hire the best candidate fast. You screen them, you rate them, and then you hire the right person fast. So try ZipRecruiter and find out why they've been used by over 100,000 businesses. Right now, our listeners can try ZipRecruiter for a free 4-day trial by going to ZipRecruiter.com/TNT. That's ZipRecruiter.com/TNT. And we thank ZipRecruiter for their support of Tech News Today. Well, the Associated Press News Service today announced that they plan to use computer-generated stories. The articles will be generated using technology from a company called Automated Insights and be used only for stories about company earnings reports. Andrew Bojan works as the news editor for Pointer Online and joins us now. Welcome, Andrew.
Thanks for having me.
So how the heck does software write a news story?
Well, it takes data, boring data, the kind of stuff that journalists have been turning into news stories for a really long time, and reorganizes it into prose. And they're really complicated and sometimes quite elegant algorithms that do this.
And where are they getting this data?
The AP is going to get data from a financial news service called Zacks. And what they're going to do is use that to turn out about 4,400 earnings reports stories. They currently do about 300 with their human staff.
So this isn't about replacing human reporters with robots. This is about, with the same number of reporters, radically increasing the number of stories they can produce.
Right. That's what AP is saying. They're saying that they're not going to have any kind of job cuts. They're not going to lessen the amount of business stories that they're doing, that this is going to free up their business pod to do more enterprise stuff, to do more investigation, to do the kind of stories that they couldn't do when they were churning out all these earnings reports.
Yeah, I actually don't think this is a terrible idea. I mean, provided the data is sound to begin with, it gives more information to more people because there's more stories, number one. And from from somebody who writes full time, I don't really feel threatened by this. These are the kind of stories that we often, internally say, well, we have to write this earnings bit, but it's going to take you away from what you were doing otherwise. Maybe you're doing some original reporting on maybe Android Wear or something. So I don't mind personally if I don't have to write the earnings story, since a robot's going to do something very generic and bland with it. It's pretty much less of a story that has an editorial feel that's needed anyway. So as a writer, I actually don't mind. I don't know what you think, Mike.
Well, I don't mind it either, because I mean the truth is we've all written these kinds of stories and they are very robotic to do. You're like, okay, well, what's the company name? When was the earnings report? What did they say? What was their this? What was their that? What was their quarter like? And so that's very amenable to algorithms. However, this company that they're relying on, called Automated Insights, has a kind of radical vision for the future of journalism. They say basically that right now there'll be one story going to a large number of people, and what they're saying is the future of journalism is a large number of stories going to each individual person. In other words, everyone will have their own individual version of every story. That's probably an exaggerated version of what is possible, but still, it sounds like they're on a mission to remake journalism and make it a more automated and robotic affair. I mean, is this something that readers should be concerned about, or should journalists be concerned about this, Andrew?
I think as long as they're marked clearly, I don't see what the problem is. You know, there's a lot of data that you already – there's a lot of stories you see already that are automated. A lot of sports stuff that you get is automated, and I think we'll probably see a lot more. You know, when you're – when you look at something like baseball scores, for example, gamers are actually fairly easy to construct from data. And, you know, I would be surprised if it ends here.
I see. Well, it sounds pretty interesting, and I imagine that there'll be increasing uses of this type of automation software for the creation of prose, essentially. And we'll probably see it creeping into other types of journalism. We'll probably see some mishaps along the way and some confused readers at some point. But if this enables a lot more information to be made available to the public in an easily digestible way, I think that's probably a good thing as well. But we'll be watching this to see, you know, if they get into doing crazy stuff like, you know, writing feature articles or, you know, human interest profiles or that sort of thing. I doubt that it'll be all fun and games at that point. Zach Bojan, I want to thank you for coming on Tech News Today.
Thanks for having me.
And you can be found at pointer.org and also on Twitter at ABEAUJON. Thanks again for joining us.
Thanks.
Well, a Google engineering director told Ars Technica's Andrew Cunningham that skins or custom interfaces will not be allowed on Android Wear, Android TV, or Android Auto screens. Those are the three new versions of Android, I guess, that were announced this week. Andrew Cunningham is a senior product specialist at Ars Technica and joins us now. Welcome, Andrew.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Now, your report was based on a conversation with Google engineering director David Burke. Who is Burke? What's his role at Google exactly?
The big thing that I think people know him for is he manages the Nexus program. So the developer phones and tablets that they put out every year, he's the one who's directing that group, basically.
I see. And why wouldn't Google want equipment makers to create custom skins for Android Wear and some of these other devices? I mean, isn't that one of the appeals of Android itself on the smartphone and tablet world? I mean, because you can customize it and sort of brand it, make it your own.
That might be the appeal for some of the OEMs, I think, who use Android, but the user experience there is not always very good. Like, I think Samsung's TouchWiz skin is one that's often cited as having some like weird design decisions. They just kind of cram as many buttons as they can into settings panels. They just do all kinds of things that are kind of inconsistent. And then if you jump from a Samsung Android phone to an HTC Android phone, you have to relearn a bunch of stuff all over again. And so what I think Google is trying to do is eliminate some of that confusion for users and make it so that, you know, one Android Wear watch or one Android TV box works just like another Android Wear watch or another Android TV box.
Andrew, it's Kevin Toefel. It was actually good to meet you at Google I.O. It was the first time we got to meet in person. Hasn't it been like a really like a total wild, wild west show with these skins on Android? I mean, there's benefits because hardware makers can make their devices stand out from the crowd or stand apart from their competitors. But I mean, it's just been a little out of hand. And I think it was time for Google to rein this all in, particularly when you're dealing with devices such as the wrist or the car in particular. I mean, I don't want to have to learn a new interface every time I switch vehicles, for example, right? So what are your thoughts on this? Because Google's taken a different stance than they have in the past.
I think they're kind of treating these new, you know, Android versions that they're launching as an opportunity for a fresh start, you know, to take some of the stuff that has not been so great about Android on phones and tablets and to correct it. Because the problem that the OEMs kind of introduce when they're making these new skins and they're making these adjustments to the, you know, the code under the hood is that they also have to manage their own software updates. And I think, as we know, they are not always awesome at doing that in a timely fashion. So I've got both the Gear Live here and the G Watch. And if you look at the exact version of Android they're running, it's like the same version number, the same build number. It looks like Google is going to be able to manage software updates directly for these devices in a way that it hasn't been able to on phones and tablets. So I think that's at least part of the drive, is to keep all the stuff from getting as fragmented as phones and tablets have.
Now, Andrew Cunningham, some guy named Kevin Toefel highlighted the fact that Android and Chrome chief Sundar Pichai said that Android One devices would run, quote, stock Android, unquote. It sounds like that's going to get the you can't change it treatment as well. The kind of the walls are closing in around Android proper. Do you think that at some point they're going to sort of require that if you use the official Google version of Android, you cannot add a skin to it?
I think they would like to move in that direction. I think that, you know, the Android One program for right now is just happening in India with some pretty small manufacturers. I think in the US especially, where you've got all these big companies competing, and then you've got the carriers too, you know, Verizon and AT&T and stuff, who also want to install stuff and brand stuff and change stuff. It's going to be more of an uphill battle there. I mean, there have been those rumors about that Android Silver program where they pay companies basically to take a high-end phone that they've made and just run regular, you know, Google Android on it. But we don't know if that's actually happening. And when we asked about it, they told us they were not talking about it. So who knows, basically.
You know, first of all, you guys should never get your news from that TOEFL guy. I hear he doesn't know what he's talking about. But secondly, in addition to what Andrew had said about a fresh start for Android, which I totally agree with, there's a whole other aspect here. Some of these skins really add a lot of cruft underneath the hood of Android and slow things down. And I think we could see some improved performance simply by staying with stock Android in a lot of these devices.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you've ever used one of these lower-end Android phones, like the Moto G or the Moto E, those are running mostly stock Android. Like Motorola does not make a lot of additions there. And even though they're not using, you know, the highest-end chips or the most RAM, like the performance and the user experience is still pretty good. So,
as part of the standardization, Google also announced that they're going to be managing software updates directly, and they also called that process automatic and seamless. We'll see about that. Does this reduce the appeal of Google's platform for companies that would make devices that run these new operating systems? I mean, you know, they're going to want a brand. You know, there's always been this war in technology. What is the logo on the splash screen? What are the stickers on the laptop? Everybody's trying to assert their brand everywhere on these products. And here Google's basically saying the software is us. That's Google. You guys can't touch it. You can't customize it. You can't make it special. You can't make it point to your own stuff. None of that. It's got to be our look and feel. That kind of makes some companies want to go look for another source for software, doesn't it?
I could see that happening. You know, Samsung has been playing with Tizen for a while, but there are two things here. First is that's a really, really steep uphill battle. I mean, I think you look at the operating systems, even like Windows Phone, which is, you know, doing better, I think, now than it has in the past, has, you know, had a really tough time breaking in. You know, BlackBerry is not doing very well. And then the second thing is that Google did say that OEMs will be able to add some things. Like if you look at the Samsung and the LG watches, you'll see that they have, you know, slightly different built-in apps. They have some different watch faces that are, you know, exclusive to each watch. So there will be some things that OEMs can change, but I think it's going to be mostly superficial stuff, you know, stuff that doesn't impact the underlying software and like fundamentally change the experience.
Well, it was a very interesting report. And Andrew Cunningham is at ArsTechnica.com, and he's also on Twitter at Andrew Writes. Thank you so much, Andrew, for coming on Tech News today.
Yeah, thanks again for having me.
All right. Well, Google announced today that it's killing Orkut, its older social network. In other news, Orkut still exists. The company posted a termination notice on everybody's Orkut profiles, saying the plug would be pulled on September 30th of this year. New profiles can no longer be created. The app is being pulled from the Google Play Store today. Orkut is still popular in Brazil and to a lesser extent India, but this is going to be a blow to Brazil. Kevin TOEFL, do you think this is going to depress some people, or they go silently into the Google Plus night as requested?
I don't think this is as depressing as what Facebook is doing, but I could see some people being certainly disappointed. I mean, I remember when some of the other Google networking bits were shut down. We had Google Wave, and I remember back in the day, FeedFriend, I believe, was shut down maybe when it was purchased. It's really tough. I mean, there's so many social networks out there, so now it becomes a which one do you choose, because I don't know which one's going to be around in 5 years. So hopefully these people don't get too upset with Google and they maybe migrate over to Google+. I actually never used Orkut. again, too many social networks. I'd really just like to keep with one or two of them myself.
Yeah, I think that to interpret this as another Google Reader type of termination that's either premature or evidence that Google can't see things through or that they kill things too often is misguided, simply because this was launched 10 years ago as a 20% project for some employee. It was an ugly Facebook clone. Google didn't take social media seriously back then, and they sort of released it quietly. It took off in a smattering of countries, again, especially Brazil. And really, the Brazilians took it over. I used it for quite a while, and all the posts were in Portuguese. It was really, it must have been like being Brazilian and using Facebook or something like that, where so much of the content is in English. But this really, I mean, 10 years, is, and with Google Plus being around now for 3 years, its three-year birthday was Saturday, I believe. It's really time to pull the plug on Orkut and move everybody to Google Plus. It has no purpose anymore. I imagine it's not growing. It's kind of ignored by the vast majority of people, and it's kind of bad to have the Brazilians in their own little sort of ghetto over there that where they're not really interacting with the rest of the world. So, you know, I'm actually glad to see it go, and it kind of removes one joke I've had for a while about, you know, the fact that whenever they kill something, you know, you say, well, Orkut is still around. You know, why don't they kill that?
Not anymore.
But it's kind of a weird thing. But again, it was very much of a Facebook clone. And ironically, it's not a clone of the modern Facebook. It hasn't really been updated that much. It's like a trip back through memory lane, because you look at it and it's like, oh, yeah, I remember when Facebook was like that like 6 years ago. It's really has an antiquated feel to it. So personally, I, for one, am glad to see it go.
And strategically, it certainly makes sense for Google, who's been trying to consolidate things. And Google Plus, let's face it, everything is becoming identified on Google through Google Plus. So
that's right. Despite naysayers who think that Google is abandoning Google Plus, they clearly are not. And I have the feeling that they're going to be hiring sometime in the next month or so a new chief to replace Vic Gundotra for Google Plus. And when they do, they have a new strategy and a new momentum behind it. They're still announcing new features for Google Plus all the time. So I really think that the reports of its demise are completely misguided. I personally enjoy it myself and see a lot of activity there. Well, in just a sec, we're going to talk about a new rumor and a new smartwatch. But first, I want to tell you about personal capital. It's hard to get your finances in order simply because nowadays, our financial information is spread all over the internet, on this site, on that site, from this financial institution, on that financial institution. How do you get a sense, an intuitive sense, of what's happening with your money? The way you do that is with Personal Capital, which is free, by the way, which is another financial benefit. Basically, the way Personal Capital works is that you plug in all of your online financial services, and then it shows you your entire financial picture in one view, in one single screen, with intuitive charts that enable you to grasp what's actually happening with your money. And of course, you can view that on your computer, your phone, your tablet, whatever. And these are real-time graphs showing that your money in a snapshot of any given moment. It also shows how much you're overpaying in fees, and also helps you reduce those fees. And you get tailored advice on optimizing your investment. So why wait? Signing up just takes a minute and pays big dividends. Personal Capital gives you total clarity and transparency to make investment decisions right away. So set up your free account. Go to personalcapital.com/TNT. And remember that Personal Capital is free, and it's the smart way to grow your money. Just go to personalcapital.com/TNT. personalcapital.com/TNT for tech news today. We thank them for sponsoring this show. Well, an Apple rumor says the upcoming iWatch would have 10 sensors, but now a different rumor says Microsoft is turning it up to 11. A report on the Tom's Hardware site says that a trusted source claims Microsoft will release a smartwatch in October, which reinforces a report published on Forbes last month, which we covered on this show. The watch, according to both reports, will be cross-platform and able to pair with Windows phones, Android, and iOS phones as well. And it'll also have its display on the inside of the wrist, not the outside. Kevin Tofu, you know those guys that wear the watch with on the inside of the wrist, and they're like, what time is it? Well, those guys are going to be, Microsoft is going to be catering to that faction of watch owners. Do you think these are credible reports? Microsoft really going to come out with a smartwatch in October?
We've heard rumors of Microsoft getting into the smartwatch game sooner rather than later for the past several months, so it would not surprise me. The company has a, I'd say a renewed vigor right now with the change in CEO, and it's moving very quickly with software and hardware, as we saw with Surface Pro 3. So it would not surprise me. As far as the reports themselves about 11 sensors, well, we all know 11 sensors is obviously better than 10, so that's a good thing for Microsoft. I'm being facetious, of course. But I am glad to hear that there may be sensors in the watch, because as we were talking earlier in the show with Android Wear, you and I have different watches right now. You have the LG G Watch, I have the Samsung Gear Live. I actually have a heart rate sensor that in my device that you do not have in yours. And we can both track our steps because there's a pedometer in there. So I'm actually ditching some of the health tracking or quantified self bits that I've been wearing. And I'd love to see more sensors in these devices, because I think there's a big value to the quantified self data points that we can get from them.
Another interesting dimension to this rumor is that, you know, there are two kinds of smartwatches. There's the watch kind, like these, the sort of Galaxy Gear type watches. And then there are the smart bands, the kind of bracelet or, band type of smartwatches. And this is reportedly the band type. It's more like the Nike Fit or something like that. But the interface supposedly is being characterized as, quote, pretty slick, unquote. And so I would love to see that. That's really, to me, a compelling device, and one that I assume Apple may be experimenting with at some point, which is where you have a very minimalist band, but with a really nice screen, a touch screen on it with a good user interface, instead of the sort of old-fashioned LED blocky kind of low-res display. So I'd love to see high-res displays in a very minimalist device. And I really think that for people with smaller wrists, for women and others who don't want a big, bulky watch, that's really going to be the type of smartwatch they'll embrace. And so whoever has a fashionable, usable, minimalist watch that actually does everything and has some sensors in it, I think they're going to really help mainstream this whole category.
I think you're spot on, and because Apple is not going to design something that's going to be maybe perceived as clunky, such as this watch, which, you know, it's a little big, I'm not going to lie about that, but I could see the band being something more svelte, something thinner that more people could wear, a bigger addressable market for people to buy, because it will fit more wrists. They're going to make something elegant, so we'll see if Microsoft does the same. It sounds like they may.
But of course, that come at a cost. It'll almost certainly only work with the iPhone and Apple products. So that's kind of Samsung-esque, although Samsung's previous smartwatches, not the one you're wearing, but the previous ones, have worked with such a small, narrow window of smartphones that was really kind of a fatal limitation. And so that will be something of a limitation for Apple, although, of course, lots and lots of people have iPhones. Well, that's the tech news today. Kevin Tofel, I want to thank you for coming on as our co-anchor today.
Thank you. Always good to be here, Mike. Thanks.
Yeah, and it was nice to see you at Google I.O. as well. I think before then I had seen you only via video, so it was great
That's
to see
correct.
That you're not a software-generated journalist.
No, was reassuring. I'm a real live boy like Pinocchio.
Wonderful. Well, thanks again for coming on. Hope to have you again soon.
Thanks.
All right, you can subscribe to Tech News Today at twit.tv/TNT, and we encourage you to do that. You can also subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/TechNewsToday. And please follow us on Twitter. At Tech News Today TV, we'll keep you updated on the news and when the shows air. We also want to hear from you, so send us email at tnt@twit.tv or leave us voicemail by calling 260-TNT-SHOW. I read every email and I listen to every voicemail, so please feel free to use those inputs to Tech News Today. Also, don't miss our evening newscast, Tech News Tonight, at 4 p.m. Pacific tonight and every weeknight. My name is Mike Elgin. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you tomorrow.